Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast. I'm your host, Crystal Bauer. It's time to say goodbye to sacrificing your well-being on the way to success. As an entrepreneur in wellness, integrative medicine fellow, university lecturer, longtime physician assistant, experienced in integrative psychiatry and functional medicine, and a keynote speaker, I have a lot of experience and expertise to share. So get ready to optimize your well-being and move in the direction of your dreams. Help spread this valuable and powerful message by sharing the podcast with your friends, family, and community. Together, we can make a profound impact on the world. Now for a quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are purely the opinions of the author. They are not intended to provide medical advice or treatment recommendations, and the contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only. Please always seek the guidance of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional. If you have any questions regarding your specific health, changes to diet and exercise, and any medical conditions. I'm really excited to have an absolutely incredible guest today, Sean Swarner. Sean's a philanthropist, an author, and a keynote speaker. He's a two-time terminal cancer survivor who's dedicated his life to helping others reach their full potential. Sean created Cancer Climber with his brother in 2001, a nonprofit organization that pays for and travels with cancer survivors to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Sean's passion for climbing and adventure blossomed after becoming the first cancer survivor to summit Mount Everest. He's also the only person to complete the World Ironman Championship and the Explorers Grand Slam, which entails climbing the summits across all seven continents and reaching both North and South Poles. He also has a documentary, True North, The Sean Swarner Story, and he also has a book series, Seven Summits to Success. His story has been shared on The Steve Harvey Show, CBS Evening News, The Today Show, and Good Morning America. So I'm so excited that we have Sean here today. And this is the second time that we've actually recorded. The first time the audio quality was a little spotty. So he was kind enough to have another conversation with me. And Sean is coming to us all the way from Puerto Rico. So welcome, Sean.
I appreciate it. Sorry, we talked about this earlier, but I apologize about the background. We're turning my wife's house into an Airbnb, and you know, you have such a beautiful background. We have like white walls. We haven't decorated anything yet.
So it is perfect. It is perfect. Well, how are things going with the remodel in Puerto Rico?
It's great. It's great because we're looking at everything we have, not at everything we don't have. So for about 5 weeks, we had no electricity. We had no water. But we had time to devote on other things. So we got the bathroom done. It's almost finished. We just have to put in the toilet, you know, minor details, things like that. But it's going, and it's great, you know, especially during the holiday season. We're very thankful to have what we do. And like I said, we're focusing on what we are able to do and what we do have, as opposed to what we can't do and what we don't have.
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful perspective to have. I'm all about gratitude. And, you know, I want to get a bit of background. You know, I know your story, but I want the audience to really get a feel for your story and your background and how you've gotten to where you are today. So I'm hoping that I'll just kind of let you run with it and you can share where, you know, where all this, your journey started, the challenges that you faced at a younger age, and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also apologize. I'm wearing a hat and a really rugged shirt. I was up on the roof painting about 10 minutes before I came down here.
All good.
Totally rugged. My life kind of took a different turn than most people. When most people are 13, you know, entering their teen years, they're focused on, you know, the popular hairstyles, the nicest clothes, being in with the cliques and going out on dates, and all of a sudden, you know, hormones kicking in, and my friends were growing hair in unusual places on their bodies. I was diagnosed with advanced stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I was given 3 months to live. So I look at life a little bit differently than most, because there were nights I went to bed not knowing if I was even going to wake up the next day. I remember I had a temperature of a fever of, I want to say 107, 108. So I was like, brain cells were frying, and they were considering packing me in ice. But I also remember earlier we talked about how, you know, I'm focusing on what we do have as opposed to what we don't. And that came from a moment when I was 13, I was 60 pounds overweight, and I was bald from head to toe. in the shower, on my hands and knees, literally weeping. And I remember just pulling chunks of hair out of the drain so the water could go down. And it was in that same moment I realized, you know, I had a choice. I could either fight for my life or I could give up and die. So I started thinking, okay, well, obviously I wanted to live. I didn't want to focus on not dying, because imagine how things would have turned out if I kept telling myself, oh, don't die, as opposed to I wanted to live. I wanted to fight for my life and live. So from a young age, I literally looked at life completely differently than most people. So I think you asked me to tell my story, and it starts, I think, at 13 when I was diagnosed with that advanced stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I had an expiration date of 3 months.
Yeah, and then, you know, you went on, and I think at 16, right, there was another diagnosis. So, you know, could you share a little bit about that process and then kind of how that all worked out to get you to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was weird because I was in remission for quite a while, I would say about a year. And then going in for a checkup for that first cancer, they actually diagnosed me with a second primary cancer. So completely unrelated to the first one. I was diagnosed, actually in one day, they found a tumor on an x-ray the size of a golf ball. They did a needle biopsy. They took out a lymph node. They put in a Hickman catheter, which is like a permanent IV. They cracked open my ribs, performed a thoracotomy is what it's called. They removed the tumor. They put in a drainage tube and started chemotherapy in less than one day. And the reason they did all that was because this time around, I was diagnosed with a type of cancer that affects 3 out of 1 million people with a prognosis of 6%. So if you have 100 people with this cancer, 94 die. And I'm apparently the only person in the world to ever had Hodgkin's and Askin's sarcoma. And the chances of me, I've done a lot of number crunching. The chances of me surviving both of these cancers is equivalent to winning the lottery 4 times in a row with the same numbers. Mm-hmm. And this time around, the doctors actually told my parents, your firstborn son has 14 days to live. So it went from 13, you know, 13 years old, I was given 3 months to live. I was in remission for a year, went back to being normal, I guess, if there is any normal for being a teen. 13, being normal for a year. And then all of a sudden I was going in for a checkup, and now I'm back in the hospital again. And I was read my last rites. I was in a medically induced coma for nearly a year of my life. You know, I don't remember being 16.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I didn't know that you were in a medically induced coma for that long.
Yeah. Every time I went for the treatment, it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So that would be the first part of the cycle. And then I would be released to have my body recover. Because people who are going through chemotherapy, they can't just continue going through it. The body has to recover to build up the white blood cells, hemoglobin, red blood cells, et cetera. Then I would go back in Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So that would be one cycle. That would be one treatment. And every time I was in the hospital, that's when the doctors gave me some stuff. So I didn't remember how harsh the treatments were.
Wow. You know, and obviously you made it through, you know, and so those statistics that they had given you did not, you didn't fall into that category, thank God. So why do you think that is? Like, why do you think that you were able to overcome this?
I think it's a combination of a lot of different things, because everybody, you know, I'm also a keynote speaker, and I've worked with corporations around the world, from Google to IBM to the New York Giants. And if you like them, then I apologize. It's not my fault for what they're doing. You know, I've realized that it was a combination of everything. And it was like the perfect storm coming together, but all with good things. And people always come up to me after the presentations and ask me, well, what do you think it was? Do you think it was modern medicine? Do you think it was prayer? Do you think it was this? I think it was modern medicine support, modern medicine, family support, prayer, and an inner will to live. So I think it was a combination of everything culminating together all at once, all at the right time. But it was also a lot right here. And I think the medical community can really change the way they do some things. And I've been thinking about it recently, because let's just say, you know, I'm a doctor and you're a patient. You're coming in and I tell you, hey, after a bunch of tests, we found that you have stage whatever cancer, and this is the treatment. This is what we're going to do. as soon as you hear that C word, you check out. Mm-hmm. But if I'm the doctor again and you're the patient, and I tell you, hey, you have a condition. This is what we're going to do. It's treatable. And oh, by the way, it's cancer. You instantly have a different mental perspective. You instantly have a different perspective on what you're about to go through. Mm-hmm. So that way, by just flipping it over, you're more empowered. Because yeah. when somebody says, hey, you have cancer, this is what we're going to do. You feel deflated. You feel like your life is almost over because no one wants to get diagnosed with cancer. However, if it's done properly from a different perspective, I think it might empower people a little bit more to be more optimistic about yeah.
I think that's really, you know, a big topic. And I've had similar thoughts as well. You know, I think the word cancer, it sparks so much fear. There's Absolutely. So much fear, and there's already so much fear in the world. And when you're faced with a medical diagnosis or a challenge, you need hope and you need to feel empowered. So I really think that there's a lot of work that can be done with the language that we use and the delivery. And I think in the medical system, you know, there should be some more training on how to really interact and the communication styles. Because I totally agree with you. And I kind of even feel like I wish there was another word. Like we could just get rid of the word cancer and come up with something that, I don't know, has like a different meaning behind it that doesn't leave people feeling like it's a death sentence. Because I think that that's what goes through people's head when they hear that word. It's so, you know, it scares people. So I'm wondering what advice you might have for people who are going through challenges, not even necessarily cancer, but just big challenges or health conditions or struggles. Do you have any words of wisdom for them?
Absolutely. Understand that, you know, especially now with everything that's going on, when COVID initially hit, people were going to the grocery stores and toilet paper was flying off the shelves, you know, and people were saying, oh, the virus or the pandemic caused this. No, it didn't. You know, what caused it was the reaction to it. So if you can develop a different reaction to something that happens and know that you always have a choice in how you react, you can see life completely different. You can be empowered and you don't have to be afraid. If you understand that you can react any way you want or every morning when you wake up, I tell myself every morning, the past is gone. There's nothing I can do about it. Tomorrow may never come. So no matter what happens today, today is the best day ever. And I wake up with that affirmation every morning and I truly believe it. And I tell people all the time, you know, I told my wife this morning, actually, see if I can remember exactly what I said. I said, make sure you or do your best to control the day. Don't let the day control you. So that way you can actually program your brain to see how you're reacting. If you're more mindful about how you're reacting to certain things, you can change how you feel. You can change the outcome. So if people at the beginning of this whole thing, if they realize, hey, you know, yes, this pandemic's happening. However, we don't need to freak out just yet. And if people just breathe, you know, if they just took a breath or three or seven or 20 or whatever it might need for some people, you know, just relax a little bit. It's the situation, and don't let the situation getting out of control by constantly feeding it energy, by constantly feeding it something. You know, the more you are in control, the more empowered you're going to be. So if you can look, as I said before, if you can look at the things that you have, not the things you don't have, focus on the gratitudes, focus on everything that you do have, not that you don't have, focus on everything you can do. Do that. Don't look over there, you know, and think to yourself, oh, you know, I wish I had that.
Yeah.
Look here, look now, look around. And one thing I always tell people too is if you want to feel tremendously wealthy, remove everything money can buy and look at what you have left.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful advice. I did a meditation last night for the Great Conjunction. Did you hear about that? The star. So I did like a download, like the Great Conjunction meditation. And I was, it was wonderful. But what the person was saying was like about coming home to yourself. And as I was breathing, you know, letting go, like you said, letting go of the past, and don't worry about the future, focusing 100% in this present moment, which is really coming home. And it just resonated with me. There was such a sense of peace in that. And, you know, mindfulness practices, I think can be so valuable, especially right now with the pandemic, and you learned this at a young age. So, you know, for you, this is like, just, this is your routine, you know, you're focused. It sounds like, at least to me, you're focused in the present moment. So you have that affirmation that you do in the morning. Is there anything else that you do that's really helped you stay grounded in the here and now?
Absolutely. And it's part of, I think I mentioned it before earlier, but I have an online program called the Summit Challenge. And you can go to thesummitchallenge.com and check it out. But the first challenge is, I call it the bookend challenge, where you wake up, don't turn on the news, don't get your mind programmed by negativity. Because so many people, if they're not mindful, if you don't program your brain, it's going to be programmed for you. So when people wake up in the morning, they 90% of the time, maybe they grab their phone and they check their emails, they check their social media, they check the news, and they're doing it either before they go to the bathroom or while they're going to the bathroom, one of the two, you know. Yes. And most people just scroll through there and they start looking at all this negative stuff. If you want to start your day off on a positive note, within the first 15 to 30 minutes of the day, Google inspirational video. Watch a 5-minute video. Then if you still feel the need to go down that rabbit hole, go check out that other stuff. But after you've planted that first seed of positivity, and then at the end of the day, the reason it's called a bookend, you know, the first thing in the morning and right before you go to bed, grab a journal. And in my program, I'll send you a journal. But then write down 5 things you're grateful for and journal about one of them. And not just what it was, but why it made you feel that way, why you're grateful for it. Because what you're doing in turn is you're actually helping yourself tune into what's the most, one of the most important things, I think, is your personal core values. So at the end of the day, when you realize that, you know, at the end of the week, I call it a weekly summary or a weekly recap. You can look through all 6, I guess, because the last day would be 7, all 6 things that you're really grateful for that happened that week. And you can start seeing trends on what's important to you. It could be family, it could be self-improvement, it could be whatever. But that way you're starting to reprogram your brain, focusing on gratitude, not, oh man, I should have done this today, or I should have done that. Or waking up in the morning thinking to yourself, oh, I need to do this, I need to do that. No, you wake up in the morning and you look at things that you are fortunate to get to do or things that you want to do.
Yeah, it's getting out of that autopilot of just going through the motions and actually starting to live again. And that's something that I'm currently, you know, working on, really fine tuning. And I find sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and I focus on things I'm thankful for, but still things from the day before still pop up, like, oh, that happened. Or, oh, I've got to worry about, you know, I've got to worry about this. And my mind is still trying to get to that place of waking up and having it be like a completely new, fresh day, a new, fresh start.
But, right. But looking back at those things that happened yesterday, what can you do about them?
I know.
And how does it help you progress through the day, focusing on what happened in the past?
So true. I know. So that is my kind of mindfulness practice that I'm working on, is really letting go. Like, that's what I struggle with sometimes, is the letting go piece. I think for me, it's like I have this analytical brain where it's like, wait, why did that happen? Or I analyze, and it's just letting it go and focusing on the present moment, which is where all the power is, you know? So your Summit Challenge sounds wonderful. I'm curious too, with all that you've gone through, and you obviously are living a very mindful life, have you had any big epiphanies, like aha moments of understanding maybe why you've gone through what you've gone through? Because I know for me personally, like, I've had, you know, through challenges, I view them now as learning lessons. Like, okay, these things have happened and they happened for a reason, to get me to where I am today, or to help me learn something really valuable, or to move me towards what I'm doing now. I'm wondering if you've had anything like that, any big aha moments or epiphanies in your journey.
I think the biggest one was the one I mentioned before, being 13 on the shower floor, because it taught me and made me realize that I should focus on what I wanted and not avoid what I didn't want. There was one moment when I was actually climbing Aconcagua, which I don't think we mentioned. I've also climbed Mount Everest with one lung and the highest mountains on every continent.
Yes, well. we need to talk about that. That's next. I was going to talk about the mountain climbing next, but that's incredible.
But going back to that question. I initially, when I was diagnosed, I think everyone asks themselves, or when they're going through an issue, any sort of trauma, why me? Mm-hmm. And that question constantly rolled through my brain. But I realized at one point, the fact of the matter is, it is me. You know, what good is worrying about it going to do? Mm-hmm. How's it going to get me anywhere? What benefit does it have? Mm-hmm. So if I sit there and I constantly ask myself, why me, why me? I may never know why.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you just have to come to terms with the fact that we don't necessarily have all the answers. Mm-hmm. You know, life's a great mystery sometimes, and there's excitement in that.
Yeah. And that's also like getting comfortable with that uncertainty. And it sounds like you've just done such an incredible job of that. And you really are living your life, you know, to the fullest, and going into kind of segueing into your mountain climbing, which is incredible. I just saw a post of you too on, I don't know if it was Instagram or something. I think you had climbed Mount Kilimanjaro with a group. I don't know if that was recent or if that was an older post, but it just looked incredible.
Kilimanjaro is beautiful. I actually take a group up there every year as a fundraiser for my cancer charity. And you should go. We're putting together now. In August, I went up. That was my 20th summit of Kilimanjaro, the highest mountain in Africa. We do a 7-day trip hike, and anyone can go. I've taken a 13-year-old to a 70-year-old, and our success rate is 98%, which sometimes people think, oh, it's not 100. Considering the average of every group on the mountain who attempts to summit that season or that year is 48%.
Wow.
Meaning 52% of the people don't make it. We're at 98%. And because we see things differently, but it's a life-changing 7-day trip on the mountain. And then we do a 4-day safari where we fly into the Serengeti, and it's life-changing.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Now, are they all people who are cancer survivors, or someone who's, you know, gone through an experience where a loved one had cancer, or is it people wanting to support a cause, or just anybody who wants to climb the mountain?
It's anyone who wants to go, but every year the Cancer Climber Association pays for a survivor to go for free.
Oh.
And then that survivor needs to raise funds for next year's survivor, kind of paying it forward keeping it in the survivorship family, I suppose. But anyone can go, and we turn it into a fundraiser for the next year's survivor. So I think we're going to take 2 or 3 in 2021. And then hopefully we can raise enough to take maybe 5 in 2022, and then 8 in 2023, and eventually work up to maybe 10 or 15 survivors every year. But it literally is life-changing. And it's to the point now where, you know, I've been up there enough times. It's not about the summit anymore. It's about giving back, and it's about seeing the difference in someone's face when they make it to the top. And it's almost like, especially, I mean, since we're so close to Christmas, you get to an age where you get more out of giving gifts than you do receiving. So, you know, on my wife's face, my nephew's face, my mom, my dad, whatever, I like seeing them happy more than them giving me something, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same thing on Kilimanjaro now. When I get to the top, people will come up to me, and everyone's just so emotional, because you've all night long. We leave at 11 p.m. and we summit around 8 or 9 a.m. So it's a long night, and you're mentally spent, you're emotionally exhausted, you're physically ready to just cash out. But when you get to the top, turn on the waterworks, because there's not a dry eye on the summit, and everyone's hugging, and then people come up and they say, thank you so much for getting me here. And I look at them and I say, I didn't do anything to get you here. And I think in that moment, their life changes and they become empowered. And it's not because of anything I did. It's because they finally believed in themselves.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're the guide. I mean, so you're kind of shining the light on the path, but you're right. I mean, they're the ones who are finding it within themselves to take the journey and to make it to the top, which is incredible. Now, is it freezing cold? Is it a really cold hike? I don't like cold. That's why I'm asking it. Is it?
It depends. People ask me all the time, well, what are the conditions going to be like?
And yeah.
My response is always, well, you know, that's like asking someone, what's it going to be like in Denver, Colorado, January 23rd?
Sure.
I mean, the sun could be out. It could be 10 feet of snow. You never know. But on average, you start at about 5,000 feet and you hike through an African jungle. It's an African rainforest. And then you eventually go through five different climactic zones reaching the summit. So you start off in a jungle where you can be in shorts and a t-shirt, or it can be sunny or torrential downpour. You never know. You wake up and you look outside your tent like, oh, it's going to be a nice day. Or you'll look outside like, oh, we're going to get wet. So from there to a climb an Arctic zone, and on the summit night, it can be maybe minus 10, minus 20. But as soon as that sun comes up, it's amazing. I call it the giant heater in the sky. But also understand that there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad gear.
Good point. Yeah, that is a good point. So I would love to hear a little bit about your Mount Everest journey because, as you mentioned, you have one fully functioning lung. So you have one lung that isn't, I don't know if it's partially functioning or just not functioning, but you were able to do that. And I think a lot of people with two fully functioning lungs, you know, that's not something that they could accomplish or do. So I would love to hear a little bit about that journey.
Sure. I think, kind of touching on that, and going back to Kilimanjaro too, people come and they think, oh, I'm going to conquer the mountain. And I think the people who fail on Everest, I mean, it could be a number of things. It could be their body's not acclimatizing properly. It could be weather. It could be faulty gear. Who knows? But I tell people all the time that you don't conquer the mountain, you conquer yourself. And it's true on Everest. And I realized that just being on the mountain was a privilege, and being on the mountain itself was a tremendous accomplishment. And I think I'm a huge believer in the mind-body connection. And I visualize myself on top the whole year beforehand, every single night. And the major thing that most people don't tap into, they potentially see themselves as like from a third person summiting or a third person accomplishing a goal. And when people do vivid visualization, they don't realize that you have to do it, first of all, from first person point of view, like what you see from your own eyes, because that way your brain understands, hey, this is me that's doing it and it's real. And then the second aspect is you have to incorporate your other senses, not just see it, but what do you smell? What's the humidity like? Do you, for me, I listened and I heard the styrofoam crunching of the snow beneath my feet. I could smell the ozone. I felt the sun blasting my face. And then I could hear the wind whipping by my ears. And then the third component that I would say the majority of people fail to do is incorporate an emotional aspect to the end result. So when I got to the summit every night in my mind, I had this overwhelming sensation of success and happiness and joy. That's what makes it real. And that's what helps with that emotional attachment in becoming successful. So I think that was one of the major differences. And I also had the entire time, we do this on Kilimanjaro as well, the entire time I was climbing, I had a flag about this big that had names of people touched by cancer. And that was the main reason I was on the mountain, to get everyone touched by cancer to the top of the world, to use that as a 29,000 foot platform to scream hope. So I think if you tap into your personal core values and you understand and do things based on what means most to you, the world is just going to open itself up to you, and you're never going to fail.
Wow, that's incredible. I felt like such a sense of peace and hope hearing you talk about that story. I love the visualization aspect of it. 'Cause I felt like I was there with you as you were describing it. That was wonderful. How I want to touch on a couple things and then we're going to be coming to a close, but how can people find you, do your summit or join the summit and kind of support your cause? And then also, how can people check out your documentary and all the other things that you're doing?
That's easy. It's just go to seanswarner.com.
Okay.
Sean, like, unfortunately, he passed away, but Sean, like Sean Connery,
Yeah.
Swarner, like the Warner Brothers with an S on the front.
Perfect. Cool. Then I also kind of last question for you is what does success mean to you? I love that question because you kind of get different answers. So I'm curious what it means to you personally.
Success to me would mean I've lived, no, let me paraphrase it. Let me back up real quick. And I'll say, when I came into the world, I was crying and people around me were celebrating. When I leave the world, I want to celebrate while others cry.
Wow.
I think that would be my version of success, knowing that I lived a completely full and intentional life.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. But anything else that you'd like to share, Sean?
I think that's good. Like I said, yeah. I apologize about the background, apologize about how I look. Literally 10 minutes earlier, I was up on the roof painting.
No, this is perfect. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me for a second time. It was an absolute pleasure. And everybody, check out Sean's site. And thank you so much. Have a wonderful holiday.
My pleasure. Thank you. You too.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Live Greatly podcast today. You can learn more about me and Live Greatly at www.livegreatly.co. You can check out my online courses, A Healthy Mind Starts in the Kitchen to Eat to Optimize Your Mood, and an 8-week online course to guide you towards optimal well-being and success. Check me out on Instagram at livegreatly_co and on Facebook at livegreatly.co. I'm also very active on LinkedIn, so you can follow me there. Please leave a review and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Share it with your friends. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, encouraging you to awaken your ultimate potential.